Agenda item number 8.
Report and possible discussion on legislative update by Matt Phillips, Government and Customer Relations Manager.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm going to go through a little bit about what the legislature did this session. For those of you that attended our annual customer meetings, I apologize. You've seen this presentation before, but the only way I could make it different would be to sing it. I don't think that would make it better, so I'll just go through it, and you'll just have to bear with me. This wasn't really a major water session this session. As you know, last session, the legislature approved the funding of the state water plan and provided a constitutional amendment, which the voters passed, to provide $2 billion towards state water plan projects, which was obviously a good thing and a positive for us and other entities that are water suppliers. But usually, in a session after you have a major water session like that, you kind of have a letdown or a lull, and the legislature ends up kind of tinkering around the edges. So that's what they did as it relates to water policy. So I'll go over that a little bit. And I'll also talk about some other bills that passed that affect local governments, that affect us as a local government, and that could affect our customers, and get into some other issues and go through some of the stuff they passed. So first of all, as it relates to water supply, one of the things the legislature had a major focus on was to promote the use of innovative technologies to create water supply. So getting beyond your typical reservoirs and pipelines. And so some of the things that they looked at were brackish groundwater development, aquifer storage and recovery, marine seawater desal, and then they also looked at the use of wind and solar power to desal brackish groundwater. And the whole point of each of these pieces of legislation was to create some regulatory certainty as to how you access these different types of water and how you use these different types of technology to try to promote their usage. So the legislature was attempting to advance the ball and encourage people to look at these technologies in order to meet their future water supply, in addition to things like conservation and building reservoirs and building pipelines. So again, all of these were positives. They were good things. We supported them. And so hopefully people will start attempting to access them here in the near future. If the legislature focused on one particular area of water policy, they focused more on groundwater than they did on surface water. And I'll go through these individually. House Bill 200 has to do with the protesting of desired future conditions that are established by groundwater management areas. Right now, there's not necessarily, before the passage of House Bill 200, there wasn't a formalized process for folks that disagreed with desired future conditions set by a groundwater management area, which is basically what you want the aquifer to look like in the future and how, which will limit permitting. There wasn't really a process to protest that. And so what House Bill 200 did is it set up a process very similar to the surface water permitting process, where you protest a desired future condition to the Texas Water Development Board, and then that goes to the State Office of Administrative Hearings, which we're familiar with in the surface water world. So it basically created that due process for protestants. House Bill 1232 is pretty interesting. You would think this is something that existed already, but it requires the Water Development Board to study and find all of the available groundwater in the state. So that's going to be a giant undertaking to see if there are sources that aren't being accessed or thought about to be accessed in the future. So basically create an inventory of groundwater that exists. House Bill 2179 is similar to House Bill 200 in that it formalizes the process to protest groundwater district permits. So that's individual permits, not desired future conditions. But again, very similar to the surface water permitting process, where it allows you to go to SOA and have a hearing in front of administrative law judges if you want to protest a permit. And Senate Bill 854 creates more certainty for permit renewals that aren't requesting an increase in the amount of water or the type of use. So if your permit is basically just renewing and you're keeping it the same, it's pretty much guaranteed now that you will get renewal unless there are some sort of extraordinary circumstances. And before I move to the next one, talking a little bit about groundwater, let me go off slide a little bit and talk about surface water. The legislature didn't ignore surface water this session. They just didn't pass a whole lot of stuff related to it. There were some interesting discussions related to surface water permitting, and they were on two fronts. One of them was a good thing. One of them was not as good of a thing. Neither of them passed. But the legislature did at least consider a piece of legislation that would have put strict time limits on how long TCEQ can take to process surface water right permits. As we know, those permits can take a very long time. And while TCEQ does have administrative rules that stipulate how much time they can take in certain phases, they're administrative rules and they don't necessarily have to follow them. So the goal of that particular piece of legislation, which again did not pass but was discussed, was to put those timelines in statute so that it's harder to ignore them and so that they can be more hard and fast. Again, it was discussed. It was not passed. I think it's something that will continue to be discussed in the future. The other surface water permitting aspect that was discussed, but it also did not pass, which was something that we opposed and likely would have been a bad thing, was to require that surface water permits consider their economic impact on affected communities, which on its face sounds okay, but the problem with the legislation is it didn't define what an economic impact was, and it also didn't define what an affected community was, so it could be anything. So essentially it made what is already a difficult, very bureaucratic, very long-term permitting process more difficult and more expensive for everyone involved. So luckily the legislature, while they discussed that one, decided not to move forward with it. So again, they discussed surface water permitting, they just didn't do a whole lot on it. Transparency. House Bill 283 is something that we talked about when we decided to go to video recording of our meetings. And as I said, when we decided to do that, that's a trend. It's something that more and more people are going to do and are going to be required to do in the future. And House Bill 283 is evidence of that because it requires municipalities, special districts, and county commissioners' courts over a certain size population to video record their meetings. They don't necessarily have to live feed them, but they have to video record and archive them on their website. So again, it's the trend. It's the way that we're going. And luckily, it's something that we're already doing. House Bill 1378 requires a very specific and intricate reporting of local government debt information. And it's particularly pointed at tax-based entities, but because it requires them to report their debt in a per capita amount for entities that issue ad valorem taxes. One of the things that it does do is it provides an exception for Chapter 49 water districts, which we are one. And the reason for that exception is in our currently required audits and the things that we already do in terms of financial reporting, we already supply most of that information as it pertains to us. So what that piece of legislation does is it says if you're a Chapter 49 water district and you're already complying with your requirements in terms of audits and reporting, just keep doing that and you'll be fine. So that'll mainly affect customers like our cities. 3557 allows entities that cover more than one county to post meeting notices online instead of having to post them in the county clerk's office in every single county that they're in. So it's just using technology to save time and expense. Senate Bill 523, which we talked about at the last meeting, requires 18 different river authorities to go through the sunset review process without abolishment, and it requires the river authorities to pay for that. As we discussed at the last meeting, because of or in recognition of the fact that we already went through an audit by the state auditor's office, an efficiency and effectiveness review by the LBB in 2014, the legislature moved us from the front of the line to the 2021 timeframe, which means that we would be reviewed in 2020 prior to the 2021 session. So again, that's the order that we ended up falling in. And then Senate Bill 1812, entities are already required to report whether or not they have eminent domain authority to the comptroller's office. What Senate Bill 1812 does is it clarifies that the comptroller has to create basically a warehouse of all entities that have eminent domain in the state so that the public can go find any entity that might have eminent domain authority in the area where they live. Ethics and contracting. House Bill 23 may have some minor effect on us as it relates to disclosures, the conflict of interest disclosures that you all have to do as local government officers. So that's something that we'll obviously be informing you on. Most of the changes were clarifying in nature, but it may require more disclosure depending on your situation, and we'll obviously keep you abreast of that. Senate Bill 20 was mainly directed at appropriated state agencies and their contracting practices, and Senate Bill 20 came out of the fallout from the Health and Human Services Commission contracting scandal, debacle, whatever you want to call it. And it put a bunch of very stringent limits on how state agencies can contract and what they have to do and the requirements thereof. It doesn't really affect local government entities with the exception of a revolving door provision that basically makes it to where anybody involved in the procurement of a service or an open bid can't go work for one of the entities that bid for a period of, I think it's 2 years. So it basically shuts that revolving door. It's a pretty strict limit and something that we'll have to comply with, as will all other entities. Finances and bonding, you know, Jim can talk more about how much this might even affect us. We don't necessarily use cap bonds. They are something that we could use. This bill focuses more on entities that use caps that are backed by ad valorem taxes, and it basically makes it to where you can't do it anymore. So this was really a focus on school districts more than it was us, but it may affect some of our customers if they want to use them. I don't think it will affect us in the future should we decide to use CAPS because, again, we don't have taxing authority and it's not something that we use. Real estate disclosures. This was an interesting one. 1221 requires disclosure of property that's in a groundwater district when it's sold. Obviously, people want to know if they're in a district and if their ability to pump water is going to be curtailed or that they have to report to a district. So it requires a person that knows they're in one to report it to the buyer. And then House Bill 1665, something that we deal with quite frequently, requires that in all new sales of lakefront property that the fact that the lake level may fluctuate if it's a water supply reservoir be disclosed to the buyer. So it will now be state law. It creates a cause of action if that does not happen. So again, I think we supported that. We think that that's a good thing. So in the future, people will not be able to falsely claim that water supply reservoirs are constant level when they know that they're not. Security. This was one that we actually engaged in. Chemical companies were having a problem with people flying drones over their facilities. And they went to the legislature and asked them to pass a bill to basically prohibit the flying of a drone at an altitude less than 400 feet over what they consider to be their critical infrastructure, which would be anything within a fence line that's something that they protect. During the debate, it was decided that why don't we do this for other critical infrastructure, and we suggested that they include dams, and so that they did. So they did. So in the future, if it's something that we choose to enforce, people will not be able to fly drones at an altitude lower than 400 feet over our dams and associated infrastructure. And then lastly, on the environmental front, House Bill 1919 for most folks was more of a clarifying piece of legislation, but it's something that was necessary. And what it basically does is it says that water supply entities like us, in the normal operation of our water supply infrastructure like our dams, pipelines, et cetera, if we end up moving an invasive species, let's say a zebra mussel, we are not violating the law by being in possession of that invasive species. You wouldn't think that that would be something that would be possible, but a technical reading of the law said that technically you could be in violation of the law by just passing water through a dam, moving it through a pipeline to a treatment plant. So House Bill 1919 clarified that and made sure that entities like us can't get sued or can't be enforced upon by just the normal operations of our infrastructure. And then Senate Bill 912 affects us as a water wastewater plant operator. A lot of times you have small spills that are minor in nature that do not reach waters of the state that are accidental discharges. Right now you have to report every single one of them, no matter how minor, to TCEQ. What Senate Bill 912 does is it allows for smaller spills, smaller accidental discharges below a certain size that don't reach waters of the state to be reported monthly. You don't have to report them immediately. You eventually do have to report them. Now, obviously, larger spills will still have to be reported as normal, but it removes a reporting burden that's unnecessary. So, and I'll wrap up by saying that obviously this isn't an exhaustive list of everything that passed. And just like with every session, what I'll do and what we're already doing is I'll get with Laura Lee in the legal department, go through anything that passed that might affect us, that might require a policy change, that might require you needing to do something new like your disclosures, and we will fully inform you on anything that that you'll need to do in the future. I don't anticipate a whole lot, but we'll let you know. Any questions? Thank you.